were hit, the Oregon State Bar would provide a program which would allow citizens of Oregon, as the plan is envisioned, to, under a group program such as a teacher group or a union group or some other group, buy legal services in a prepaid basis on a monthly fee, and then at such time as they needed legal help, consultation, or court assistance, they would be able to go to the attorney of their choice, and the insurance would cover that program. Now, it's envisioned that a legal insurance program would not be able to pay all of the legal services needed by individuals, but would be paid either by partial coverage or in stages of coverage, with more extended coverage costing more dollars. And I'd like to pass out to each of the members of the committee a chart that has two or three programs that have already been instituted. The first program set out in the chart is a Shreveport, Louisiana plan. And it provided, as the chart shows, that there was a certain amount of needed legal consultations in office provided, a certain amount of coverage in court provided, up to a certain dollar limit. And if I remember correctly, the fee that individuals in the particular labor union in Shreveport, Louisiana paid was somewhere between the range of $12 and $15. The insurance commissioner's office provided me with several amendments that they felt were appropriate that would bring legal insurance contractors in line with all other insurance contractors in the state, would provide that they have the reserve requirements necessary for the protection of the public, and bring them all up under all of the filing requirements that an insurance contractor should have. In the House committee, I made those proposed amendments. They were accepted and incorporated into the bill that you have before you now. Mr. Llewellyn from the Oregon State Bar Association testified in favor of the bill on the House side and was not able to be here this afternoon, but asked to express his strong support of the bill. And again, the entire thrust of the bill is an attempt to provide middle and low income Oregonians with the opportunity to buy legal services at a rate that they can afford. The estimated figure is that 75% of those in America who need legal services either do not ask for them because they feel they cannot afford them or don't know sufficiently where to go for the help. I urge your adoption of the bill. I think it's good for Oregonians. I like to call it a consumer-oriented piece of legislation for the help of Oregonians. I'd be glad to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Question to Mr. Representative Bunn.
I'm sorry, Madam Chairman, that was late. This is really an OPS for lawyers, isn't it?
It could be termed OPS, Blue Shield, Blue Cross, yes. That type of thing for the needs of citizens in terms of their legal service.
Did you say this would come under the insurance commissioner's supervision?
It's completely under the insurance commissioner's office. There is a member of the insurance commissioner's staff here to answer any questions you might have of them. We put in all the amendments that the insurance commissioner's office asked for to ensure protection of Oregonians.
Did you speak to the financial stability of this type of program?
Right. I commented on the fact that the insurance commissioner's amendment would require that it have the reserve necessarily set out for other insurance contractors in the state of Oregon, that it have reserve requirements. And it's tied in with the Oregon State Bar.
Just as I came in, you were referring to other states. Has this been used enough so that there really is any real background of information as to what adequate reserves would be and that type of thing?
I would say this, that the American Bar Association has done a great deal of study. There are several programs in other states. The way that it's envisioned this would work is that all those attorneys who signed up to do work under the legal insurance program would agree in advance that should the fees from insurance coverage not cover their services, that each member of the Bar Association that worked would take a pro rata share, so that if there wasn't enough money to go around, it wouldn't be the consumer or the Oregonian that was hurt, but the Oregon State Bar member would knowingly realize that he would have to cut his fee by that proportional amount. We don't have the experience ratings in terms of how much it's going to cost for the program, and that's the very reason for requiring the members to barter.
That's where OPS started out.
Right. we've tried to build in every protection to the Oregonians so that they wouldn't have an undue burden through the program.
Did you say that the American Bar Association was supported this program?
Well, they haven't stated that they support this particular program that we've developed. The Oregon Bar Association has testified in favor of the bill.
Right.
The American Bar Association developed a plan that's very similar to this bill.
What about, Manitoba, what about interstate? The first spokesman that I have actually when I was in Vancouver, Washington, and I wanted you to represent me as a member of this association, of this thing.
Your insurance coverages would extend, if you're a member of a group, for example, you're a member of a labor union and you have that out-of-state problem, if you have your insurance coverage through the labor group, it would still cover. In other words, you would still be able to hire your attorney.
Is this only available to groups?
At the initial stages, because of the inexperience in the program and the statistics you have to develop through a program, initially it would only be available to groups such as education groups, labor union groups, business groups. The most developed program in Shreveport, Louisiana was a labor union that used the program. My feeling as a sponsor of the bill was that it would be dangerous to the citizens of Oregon to attempt to develop an individualized program at this early stage.
Further question.
Who has provided the bond for $25,000?
The nonprofit corporation that the Oregon State Bar sets up would provide.
There would be a membership fee.
Right.
Thank you.
Senator Iverson.
What we've heard is it's restricted where they cannot provide services except to groups.
Well, this bill doesn't restrict, but what it does is sets up the corporation, and the Oregon State Bar has testified that they envision initially simply administering a group program. In other words, they feel it's necessary to
do it. Well, I mean, it's not limited.
No, the bill itself wouldn't limit the possibility of moving in.
Are you here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar?
I didn't mean to say that I was representing them in any way.
I didn't mean to imply your words, but my question is the bar here? They're not signed up.
No, I contacted Mr. Llewellyn from the bar, and he said that he would not be able to attend the meeting. He did attend in the House side and testified that he was very supportive of the bill. Indicated to me that he was sorry that he wasn't able to be here today to testify in favor of himself. He had other commercials.
Well, I think Senator Smith, in connection with the question I asked him.
Yeah. Dan, it looks to me like you do limit the application of this bill to a legal service contractor, which you define in subsection 2 of section 3, as a nonprofit corporation.
Right.
That's the one who is serving, not the recipient.
Senator Ivers was asking about the recipient, whether there could be an individual recipient, and I stated the bill didn't prohibit the individual recipient.
Well, I'm confused too, because I thought this was the recipient, but this is the organization that provides our service, puts up the surety bond.
I might comment further, Senator Smith, on that Mr. Rawls from the Insurance Commissioner's Office testified in the House that he has had several inquiries from private individuals or companies in the area, and this bill doesn't prohibit private companies. Simply, the Oregon State Bar, which was a quasi-governmental unit, wasn't able to go into the area, and this allows them to. It doesn't prohibit the private ones under existing law.
Further questions? Thank you.
The Oregon Medical Association has one of that directly. The Oregon Medical Association. So wait, what is it? No, come with me.
Oh,
there's something comparable to this that uses it now. I just can't remember what it was. Well, the Oregon Medical people have Blue Cross.
Yeah, I know they have that.
Which could be analogous to what we're doing here, although this is in a much more primitive stage.
This is where OPS got started.
I would say, Madam Chairman, certainly at any time in the future, if any member of the committee has questions or would like further clarification, I'd be glad to receive any further information.
What other bar association has a plan that's most similar to this one?
Shreveport, Louisiana has a, and it's set out in that, in the top part of that handout that I gave to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. In the other book, let's turn to Senate Bill 813 and the Carson.
Probably just kind of think to figure that out.
One?
I have the famous idea what it means.
Do you want to try?
No, it's a house. We better decide what it is.
Well, it's going increasingly in normal parts for the I don't know what that means.
Oh.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Wally Carson from Marion Lynn County, District 16. I'd first like to add my support as one of the many sponsors to the bill you just heard, 2389. I'm here today.
You think that's
are you going to carry it?
Yes, I would. That's right.
Oh, wow.
I'd be pleased to. And how do you carry a table bill?
Well, I sense that, Mr. Chairman. I'm carrying on the best thing you can do a little mouth to mouth
substation
here.
Right.
Senate Bill 813 was a bill that I'll take a moment on to give you the background for it. Judge Hicks is here to, and I hope we'll comment on some aspects of it because it's more comprehensive than I really originally thought. The background on this bill and the major genesis of it.
This is the other book.
Yeah, 813.
813.
This bill requires the Supreme Court with the assistance of the state's administrator to prepare, review, and adopt rules for written pleadings. And I'm thinking of primarily orders and it could also be complaints and other things. What we've found is that as our population becomes, particularly in the Tri-County area, becomes quite transitory, we have a number of lawyers and a number of clients who deal in several forums, Washington County or Multnomah County or Marion County or whatever. And each county, I'm sure this committee knows, has its perhaps its own preferred form of pleading, whether it be a complaint or an answer or a demur or a motion or an order or a judgment or a cost bill or a petition or whatever it may be. We have relied in many aspects upon a private publishing company, Stevens Ness, which has no official authority, but I'm sure that it has been taken view of, if I recall correctly, by the Supreme Court upon more than one occasion. But the result is we have very little uniformity in many of our standard forms, which necessitates primarily clients who deal in more than one county to bend to the particular desire of the particular county district court. The thought that there ought to be one way to do it, there ought to be one reasonable procedure, and this procedure ought to be adopted statewide so that whether you're in Vail or Salem or Corvallis, you were reasonably sure that you weren't going to get crosswise on a particular form that deviated from the norm in your locality. So this was given to, if I recall correctly, the Legislative Council of Modern Oregon State Bar for them to work on, and what you have before you is a very comprehensive bill patterned after another state, and I've forgotten the name of the state, that requires the Supreme Court to take over this activity. This is a little further than I intended to go, but after reviewing the bill, I thought we ought to start at the top, and if this committee does not want to move so forcefully into this area.
What respect is it further?
Well, and I have a letter here that I will leave with the court that I received today from the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, the Honorable Kenneth J. O'Connell, which speaks to it. You recall that this was not intended to be directly involved in the continuing saga of whether the Supreme Court ought to have rulemaking power. And to those of you that are lawyers and perhaps those of you that are honorary judges would understand that this has been whether we go into the federal rule system has been a continuing battle in Oregon for at least two decades. And there is a House Bill 2905, which is in the House Judiciary Committee, that speaks to the full complement of power in the Supreme Court to provide rules. Once they have that rulemaking power, the court, as I read his letter, would indicate that necessarily they would have the authority to then prescribe standard pleadings and judgment orders and so on. This goes a lot further than I care to. I did not care to get into that battle, but I do think that the one place that that we could all agree upon, or most of us could agree upon, in the area of forum, would be the area of forum. And so this is why the bill was prepared. I think that, and I'm sorry I don't have copies, I just received the letter today, but I will leave the letter with you. The Chief Justice does point out that perhaps, and I'm sure Lauren Hicks will mention it to you, the way it's now drawn has a fiscal impact, and if it stays in the present form, it ought to go to Ways and Means, because after talking with Judge Hicks, I concluded that he will, I'm sure, very carefully point out to you that it will put a substantial financial burden on the court administrator or the Supreme Court to do this in all one fell swoop.
Does your limited version that you originally contemplated not have the fiscal impact that you're saying?
This original bill does. The bill here does. The original concept was do nothing more than as the Chief Justice indicates, as we've done in many other areas, and appoint a bar committee to devise the uniform pleadings for the approval of the court. So that would not cost money or a very minimal amount.
But that's not in the bill.
Not in the bill. It could be put in the bill and could be done, and I think Mr. Hicks will speak to that. For the simple reason that if we require them to do it in a short period of time, and we don't require them in the present bill, but if I think that the difference, Madam Chairman, is this, that this bill is permissive as I read it, and they can move into it slowly with the Oregon State Bar's assistance, and the cost would be minimal, in my view. On the other hand, if the sense of the legislature is for them to immediately or swiftly move in and establish forms throughout the state that has a substantial impact and would overburden the court administrator and the Supreme Court budget at this time. My view of the matter is that it could be a slow procedure, that we just allow the Supreme Court, as it moves in that direction, to prescribe and to adopt standards or uniform rules of pleading, and I think the cost is minimal. But I would defer in this instance to the man who's administering it would know more about what it costs than I. I did not anticipate a cost figure. I'm now convinced that even the modest provisions in this bill will require substantial. We're going to get the job done.
Would it be an appropriate function, your limited version, for the Law Improvement Committee?
Yes, it certainly could be. Very well could be. I think, though, that what we need is we need some statutory authority to put the responsibility in the Supreme Court. That I think we need, and that's the very least of this bill, and it's permissive. Now, how we get there is a question that I have no fixed notion on.
Well, if we can put the responsibility there without creating a fiscal impact, I don't think it's going to have a very long life if it has a significant fiscal impact.
I sense that too.
So the question is, do we get something or nothing? And what is the something we want?
Well, there are some provisions in the bill that require some activity on the part of the court administrator. And I think perhaps, if I may, Madam Chairman, allow him to respond really to the fiscal impact.
Yes, just take time to come up with one.
Because as I said, my intention was not to put in the budget, state or the court, but he has convinced me emphatically that if we move swiftly in this area, it will have a substantial burden on his office.
Warren Hicks, State Court Administrator. The Supreme Court has not acted as a court on Senate Bill 813. However, the Chief Justice is familiar with it and has this letter, which I understand. Are you going to get a copy of that?
Yes, I'll make it available.
Which I hope the committee will read it. It emphasizes the Chief Justice's opinion. He is in favor of this bill, or this procedure at least, maybe not the specifics of the bill, but the idea of rulemaking power in the Supreme Court. As far as the fiscal impact, I don't think it would be a large amount of funds required to our office to properly implement this bill in a reasonable length of time. But the reason that we have talked with Senator Carson about fiscal impact is that there are several bills in the legislature and several ideas in the legislature, state government generally, the governor's office, of things that the state court administrator's office should be doing that they are not now doing. And for instance, drafting rather elaborate rules of procedure in one area or another. For instance, one of the other bills is handling reports of and statistics of the municipal courts and justice of the peace courts, of which there are 200 in some states, so we don't do anything like that now. Every single person on my staff has more now than he or she can properly do. Obviously, we're not absolutely inundated, but we're all slightly overworked, which is probably a very good point to be. But to take on anything substantially in addition would, I think, be impossible. And for instance, the present time, and for the year I've been in this office, since January 1972, I've been trying to get a new publication of our present appellate court rules. Those rules were put out in January 71, I believe it was, and Senate Bill 66 of the last session made quite a few substantial changes in the procedures on the appellate court. And there's been other things happened in the meantime, and already those rules are very badly out of date. And I've had a law clerk from time to time working on it. Justice Lusk has returned and is working on a consulting fee basis from time to time, but there is simply nobody in my office who can give their attention to those rules. And I think they should have been republished almost a year ago. And I would say now we're probably several months away from republishing them. They're out of print. The attorneys call in and want a copy, and we can't furnish them a copy.
Well, and the reason is the exchange between myself and Senator Carson is you're talking about a significant fiscal impact. I don't think the bill is going far. Is there any part of the bill that you want that doesn't have large fiscal impact?
The reason I say it wouldn't be large, I think one attorney over several months could accomplish what the bill wishes to have accomplished. He would do a good deal of research, he'd do a good deal of traveling, visiting with the local bar associations,
so
learning.
$20,000 for the attorney, $6,000 for the secretary.
Something like that. We haven't budgeted out. We haven't made a fiscal study of what it would cost, but in my own view, it would cost the service of a good attorney for maybe 6 months and some travel expense. And perhaps we could absorb the secretarial part of it.
There's nothing left.
Pardon?
There's nothing left that you want.
Less?
Mm-hmm.
That's the word you
need. That's the word.
Yeah. No. I think probably what we should have in the Supreme Court, after seeing the legislation come into this session, some general consulting money available to us to employ people for short periods of time to work on a project like this that's going to come up and be handled in 6 months or with less than a year, and then that's the end of that one, and it might be a while before we have another one. But we didn't create our budget that way, and I think maybe we will in the future. But the only thing we're worried about is having too many jobs put on us that we cannot do in the time it should be done, in the manner it should be done. And to do this job, which we, as far as my office is concerned, and the Chief Justice, we just assume do, and in fact the Chief Justice feels that we should be making procedural rules around the state for uniformity, it would just take the staff time and the visitation time to be sure we had proper rules that were the best that we could get when the product was out. And that would require a great deal of consultation with the various courts and the attorneys in those courts before we come up with a product we think would be acceptable. And we don't want to just arbitrarily throw up a draft of rules in our office and say, these are what you're going to follow. We think it should be the creation of the practicing bars and the trial courts throughout the state. We do have right now a group of judges who are working through the judicial conference, simply drawing some expense money out of our judicial conference budget, that are studying and coming up with some model rules for calendaring procedures. and this is the first time we've tried anything like this on a uniform basis across the state. And these judges are going to have their report ready by June at the judicial conference, and we hope that we'll get a consensus there on this one element of how to calendar cases uniformly throughout the state. But there's many, many other areas that could be made uniform that very much help the practicing lawyers.
Senator Carson.
Madam Chairman, one alternative in search of your, or perhaps an answer to your search for a lower profile on this might be, and I, in fairness to Judge Hicks and the Chief Justice, I'm not sure that with him, I'm just thinking that perhaps by eliminating Section 2 this time around and the balance of it, so really all you have in front of you would be the lines 13 through 19, which say the Supreme Court eliminate pursuant to Section 2 of the Sentencing Act, then may adopt rules. In other words, you give them the authority so that if they come up with one standard form of answer, then that's all they can afford at the time, they can at least promulgate that as a standard form of answer. And then perhaps we can do, as Judge Hicks indicates, either go through the bar or, as you indicated, Madam Chairman, go through the Law Improvement Committee and fill out the balance of it over a longer period of time, but at least give the court the authority to do it, so that once the rules, once we find the proper motion, after all the hearings not paid for by the state, the court has the muscle to adopt that as the judgment order or whatever the case.
Well, that seems like a possibility. I don't see how we could possibly take a bill to the floor that simply recommended that we spend money with no specific program or anything outlined.
Well, frankly, Madam Chairman, that would get done, the first step. That'll take longer, but perhaps that's more appropriate. I really think 813 is a better way to approach it. But it has to be funded.
It would appear the office isn't geared up.
That's correct.
Chief Justice addresses this in his letter, incidentally, and I've just had copies. They'll be here shortly.
Senator Smith.
I'm assuming that which may or may not be true, the majority of this committee might support this idea, then the Committee on Ways and Means ought to determine the question of funding. But currently, that maybe the proper thing to do is to send this bill away. Let him fight the battle of priorities with Judge Hicks and Wally in ways and means where it belongs. If we agree that this kind of change in the law and the rulemaking procedures ought to be given to the Supreme Court. We can merely provide it if you have to wait for me.
That's one possibility. I view it differently. Wally wouldn't be satisfied with simply giving him the authority. I think if it goes ways and means, the whole thing may go down the pipe, and he won't get the minimum what he wants.
If the subsection 2 was taken out, the Supreme Court had the authority, but not the direction of just when and how to do it, and we could do it as we could, and perhaps even a step at a time, like perhaps calendaring and then notices and so forth, we probably could absorb it over a period of time without really having to have any special funding for it.
Senator Keithburn.
Well, you mean to remove subsection 2? Oh, you mean section 2 itself.
Same thing. Subsection 2 of section 2, the part about the hearings and the formalities of it.
Oh, you want subsection 2 of section 1.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Eliminate the rest of the bill.
Line 26, on down through line 2 of the next.
Does that do essentially what your original bill?
That struck the motivation behind the bill, why the bill was introduced. And that is, if we can convince the court that this is the proper rule or the proper order that we all have, they can in fact adopt it as the proper form. And it becomes, in other words, really what we're doing is substituting the Supreme Court of the State of Oregon for Stevens Nest. And I think that's the change is better, in my view. I'm not trying to do them out of business, but
meeting in practice committee, the logical committee. So.
Yeah, could very well be.
Well, I think the court could indicate, couldn't they?
Court together. I think the chairman has indicated it could go to law improvement or special funding if that's necessary, or it could be absorbed slowly in the state administrator, or it could go directly to pleading practice aspect of state bar.
Could be that committee in conjunction with the judicial conference working with just some expense money, you know, for reimbursement of actual travel, which wouldn't amount to
questions.
But is 2905 the same as 813, or is this better than
No. 813 is 2905 is much more comprehensive, and I think the point that the Chief Justice makes is that if 2905 passes, then it encompasses, as I understand it, basically the authority that 813 is asking for.
Does this have
you have a copy of the letter to Lou Hampton a long ago?
Yeah. It's 2905 that's just going past here.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with 2905. There is a letter here that the judge, in a copy of the letter he sent to Lou Hampton about 2905, reads or gives some rationale behind there.
It'd be about the same situation, I think, as far as the impact of my own.
Thank you, Judge Hill. If you turn to Senate Bill 674, Nita Bells.
I'm Nita Bells. I'm Justice of the Peace of Ontario and also currently serving as President of the Oregon State JP Association. Senate Bill 674 came about because since I became justice and also president of the association, I've taken a look at some of these statutes applying to justice courts, and I find that they have been woefully neglected over the years. And probably those in the metropolitan area where you are more concerned with district court would be so aware, but for those of us who are out in the country, and these courts are an integral part of our system, it's important that they work. And I think these amendments would make them far more viable and meaningful a part of the criminal justice system if they were imposed. Number one that we ask for is that 050 be amended. Because we ran into a problem with the new criminal code, and I've been assured by Mr. Follett and others on the committee that it was not intentional to cut the jurisdiction of justice courts, but rather by accident. Some of them, the class A misdemeanors, are now viable in justice court, and some are not. It's caused a great deal of consternation around the state, and everybody's really sure whether it can be heard or not heard. And originally, we asked that only those counties in which they did not have district courts, that the jurisdiction be raised from $500 in 1 year to $1,000 in 1 year. But it was brought to my attention shortly after the bill came out by some of the people in the counties that also have district courts, that they're having problems too, in that what has happened in many instances that they're brought into the charge brought in justice court, they are arraigned there, they enter the plea, and then they're required to travel sometimes anywhere from 10 to 75 miles to district court for sentencing, which seems sort of ridiculous to me and doubles the work of both courts. And it's certainly an inconvenience, I think, to the defendant and everybody else involved to have to go somewhere else for sentencing. I don't foresee that it should cause any problem with the district. Those people who are more interested in district court for this reason, I'm sure you're all aware that the district attorney controls where cases are going to be filed anyway. So anything that was of a serious nature that he foresaw any problem with would always be, I'm sure, filed in the district court where he had the law trained good. So this is what we're asking for to do there. The second section we'd like to see moved is 51080, because at this time, because years and years ago when I was talking to Ed Vanfield, neither one of us could remember how long ago, the limits for the civil matters in justice courts were set at $250. And today's economy is almost ridiculous. So we're asking that this be raised to $1,000 so that it would be far more usable in these areas as it is where there aren't district courts. These people are having to file anything over $255. They're going to go to circuit court, which has caused sundry problems that they're, I think, in crowding their dockets. More expensive for the people trying to collect their bills because their filing fees are suddenly more expensive. So we feel that this would also be more in line with today's economy. And then to go into the small claims in section 55011, it's still limited to $200, while around the rest of the state, the district court is handling up to $500 in small claims. And believe me, with this wide variance in what can be handled, the people all over the state are really confused. For instance, an attorney from Portland writes down and watches the file in the small claims department down there, and of course he finds out we're not even equipped to handle it because we can't exceed $200. And the people begin to get confused. You know, how come in one county it's all right to do it, in another county it isn't? I think it's also more in line with what's going on today. They just flat need upgrading. The other problem that we also noticed, or at least that I've had occasion to from the standpoint of the state, and this is that in the last session it was amended, the district court statutes were amended so that an attorney, or a corporation rather, and the state and city political subdivisions can appear in small claims court, just notwithstanding ORS 9.220. But it was not applied again to the justice statutes, and again, this is confusing to the state of Oregon and to others who attempt to use the small claims division and find that our statutes have never been brought up today. I guess what I'm saying in a way is I'd like to have you really look at this. I think these courts are here. They're going to be here for some time in the rural areas, and they should be as meaningful and as usable as possible. It can eliminate the confusion that's around the state. We're also headed towards judicial reform and have been for a long time. And I believe that by bringing the statutes from the justice court more in line and into conformity with the district courts and the other courts throughout the state, that if and when we come up with a usable plan, then we'll have people that are educated and trained and ready to go, and that the absorption of these minor courts into a unified state system with the transition would be smoother, with a lot less problems. So on that basis, I certainly ask you to consider this bill on behalf of the people of the state of Oregon. And I'd certainly appreciate it if we could have a due pass. And we're not asking for money.
Questions of Judge Fellows?
Yeah.
Sunrise.
Four. Sub 2 of Section 4, notwithstanding that there are corporations, state, or county, wouldn't this open up for a collection agency to come in and hire a attorney?
Yes, they could come in as an individual if they wanted to assign the matter.
They could come in as a corporation, too.
But to this time, they're precluded from coming in because they have to have an attorney.
I know.
True, it would
open it up for a collection agency.
That would.
Do you have any objection to having corporations trust?
I have no objection to it. I just think that it's more fit to keep it in mind with exactly the same as the district court, that the corporation is appearing in district court under the same circumstances.
Further questions,
Judge Fellows?
Judge
Fellows, how long have you been the justice of peace over there?
6 years.
What was the name of your predecessor? Is there two over there?
There are four in that area.
Four?
In Mount County.
Oh, in Ontario. Yeah. How many in Ontario?
One.
Who's in Bayer?
That's Graham.
Mary Graham. What's your name?
Mary Graham.
That's who I think that.
You don't have a different judge in Ontario?
No. Nope. We don't.
We got one circuit judge in the whole area. All right? No different judges. Now you're in Harney County.
I gotta talk to you about probate matters. Same problem.
At this time, we got lots of miles, not too many people.
Lots of problems.
We had a district judge who spent all of his time dashing between Burns and Ontario, which sometimes during the summer and in the winter would be pretty untenable.
Right. Further questions? Thank you, Judge Fellows.
Thank you for your talk and hearing for you.
Anybody want to move an amendment?
I'm going to ask a question. Joe, your problem was with corporations.
Right.
The point that loan agencies should come to the JP court without an attorney. Currently, they can go to a district court without an attorney if it's over $500.
They can go to district court in small claims. What's the amount limit?
500.
You changed the law last time on district court.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Point of issue. It doesn't go anyway. I don't understand your problem.
Well, I'd like a little time to see if it doesn't put it over five. I guess it's open up now, though. In fact, I'd like to restrict them.
The problem is the collection agency taking default judgment for the defendant doesn't really understand and has to appear. And
Then he's in a or something with a slug of them and take defaults on them.
The other problem, George, is that some collection agencies are owned by attorneys.
Well, that's...
And then they come in, and in that sense, I think, can an attorney appear in small claims? There's a couple of them important in the room.
Yeah, that's true.
Attorneys are everything.
I know.
Well, that's somewhat of a disadvantage. An attorney owns a collection agency, so they're an attorney who comes in small claims court, just court, and but the other side isn't entitled to an attorney.
How would it be corporations other than collection agencies?
I don't know if it's questionable. I mean, in theory, I agree with you, but...
There may be a special statute in which they organize, like a list of my name, I don't know what it is. Typical organized under...
You know, specifically what corporations are you thinking of that state, city, and county doesn't cover? And political subdivisions.
Sometimes, yeah, there is.
You mean a water district?
Well, for instance, Ideal Gas. In other words, they might have 10 bills. We have a lot of migrant people. Maybe they've got 10 bills and they're like $12.80 a piece or something like that. You go to a collection agency or go to an attorney, you know, it's just sort of stupid, but it can add up to 100 of those $10 bills. And it's a substantial loss to them as a corporation. So many of these people would like to file, but they're excluded. And I recognize the fact that they can come in, but in a sense they have been sneaking in for years, I'm sure, because they've been signing claims out in the name of individuals and bringing them. So it really, all this is doing is just putting it right out on the table. So if there isn't any question, if the one that's coming after you is such and such a credit company, where before they might have said it was Jim Jones coming in, and then when you look down there and found out really Jim Jones had all this kind of sign again.
Senator Burns.
Well, is it anything other than a public utility you're thinking of?
Yes, I think corporations, all corporations, appear at some time or other, depending on the size of the client.
Have you heard of that?
Judge,
whatever it might be worth. I think there's also many small corporations, one-man corporation, a man-and-wife corporation, that they're just incorporated for convenience, and they are maybe have a bill for $100, and they want to argue over collecting it, they want to go to small claims court. And yet, if they are incorporated, now they have to get an attorney, whereas under this bill, like the district court, the owner could go in and appear as an individual. And there probably are many very small corporations that are not kept out of the small claims justice court.
Thank you. Okay. George, can you get an amendment?
No, I'm not really convinced in OOI that I'm opposed to it. I mean, at first, but I can see if that's what that, there are.
You don't want to
take it. Well, I don't care if they want to pass it out.
Well, let me ask one question. Corporations, they can appear in small claims courts now.
Right. In district court only.
District court small claims.
$500 or more.
next door.
Oh, not up to 500.
Yeah. So this is not doing anything different than what...
This would still restrict it to 500, or are they waiving that out?
No, after that, what happens is that anybody that has a claim of $20 or more can remove it to the district court out of the small claims department. And that usually means they're going to have an attorney.
What?
I'm just trying to recall some things about the Justice Court that I've forgotten about.
Let's see.
That got me real worried. I'm looking for the evil in
this. Senator Smith moves Senate Bill 674.
There's no evil in neither, though.
East of the continent,
into the other time zone.
Senator Smith moves Senate Bill 674 to the foil of the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk calls the roll.
Senator
Cooper.
Aye.
Senator Iverson. Curtis East in Oregon, aye.
Senator Hoyt. Senator Smith.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. Nita, Senator Smith may want to, he's going to carry it, he may want to talk to you. Nita's adjourned.